You're listening to a Frequency Podcast Network production in association with City News.
Ever since Pride events became huge parties, and especially since they began attracting big money corporate sponsors, there's been a debate about the meaning of Pride. Should it be a party? A celebration of inclusion for LGBTQ2S people around the world, full of joy and love and welcoming to anyone who wants to take part, including police? Or is Pride, at its roots, still a protest? A reminder of the fight for queer rights that began decades ago and is still sadly necessary in so many places around the world. And a reminder that police have not always been on the right side of that. This is especially true in places like Toronto, where both Pride celebrations and the history of the queer community are absolutely massive. And the debate is a fair one on both sides. Until recently, though, any questions about the money behind Pride Toronto, where it came from, what was promised in return for funding, and whether or not it was delivered, were largely theoretical. That's changed. An investigation has revealed some anomalies about money obtained through grants for Toronto Pride. These anomalies have prompted a review by an independent firm hired by the new guard in charge of the organization, which is promising transparency. So what happened behind the scenes at one of the world's largest Pride celebrations? And what does it mean for the future of the event? As a party or as a protest? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Krishna Rao is a Toronto-based writer and reporter with extensive experience covering queer issues. He looked into the funding behind Pride for Extra. Hey, Krishna.
Hello, Jordan. Thank you for having me.
You are very welcome. Why don't you start by explaining where this came from? Who is Tom Hooper and what did he set out to do?
Well, Tom Hooper is a history professor at York University here in Toronto. He has a special interest in terms of his work in the bathhouse raids that police conducted in Toronto in 1981. Mm-hmm. And so he saw that Canadian Heritage was funding a number of events to commemorate what would have been the 50th anniversary of the 1969 supposed decriminalization of homosexuality. So he submitted a Freedom of Information request to Canadian Heritage, found out that among the groups that were receiving funding for these events was Pride Toronto. He saw that as he put it, as a betrayal on Pride's part of the Toronto queer community.
Why would he see it that way?
Well, because in 1969, Pierre Trudeau, they passed legislation supposedly decriminalizing homosexuality. But since then, as I think most people are aware, there has been continued persecution by police of the queer community. Specifically, in 1981 in Toronto, police conducted a series of raids on gay bathhouses in the city, arresting a considerable number of gay men who were in those bathhouses.
Right.
Which led to a number of gay men losing their jobs, being publicly shamed, and in a couple of cases, committing suicide. Mm-hmm. This took place 12 years after the supposed decriminalization of homosexuality. And there have been countless other arrests since 1969. And those 1981 bathhouse raids were also part of the spark that led to the formation of Pride Toronto as we know it today. Mm. So Tom saw the fact that Pride was a part of celebrating this supposed decriminalization of homosexuality as a betrayal of what he thinks should be Pride's principles and Pride's reasons for existing.
Right.
So he submitted a series of freedom of information requests to the Canadian government to obtain as many of the documents he could surrounding Pride's grants from the government and the conversations that took place around that.
So first of all, how much grant money are we talking about here in total? And then secondly, once he got those documents, what did he see in them? And what does he claim he's revealed about these grants?
Well, the grants, there are three grants, which totaled originally $1.85 million. Two from Canadian Heritage, one for $250,000 and one for $600,000, and one from Public Safety Canada, which totaled $1 million. Tom received documents from Canadian Heritage. Public Safety declined to provide any documents. Tom says that all these documents reveal that a pattern of Pride providing misleading information to the government, exploiting Indigenous artists as part of obtaining these grants, and falsifying letters of support from community organizations in the Indigenous and queer communities.
Can you give me some examples specifically of the allegedly false or misleading statements, just so the listeners can try to understand, you know, what kinds of claims were being made?
Certainly. Well, for example, Pride claimed that they had a contract and an ongoing agreement with Indigenous artist Kent Monkman to provide a series of paintings to commemorate the 50th anniversary of the decriminalization of homosexuality. Now, certainly anyone who knows Kent Monkman's work would understand that he would have no interest in commemorating that event. And in fact, he didn't and never did sign a contract with Pride about that. And yet Pride continued to claim in reports to the government that arrangement was ongoing. As well, Pride, when asked by Canadian Heritage to submit letters of support from community organizations, Pride submitted letters from the 519 Community Center, which is a queer community center in the heart of the queer village in Toronto, and from the Assembly of First Nations. And both organizations, and I confirmed this by talking to them myself, say that they never sent such letters.
And just to be clear, to set us up for the remainder of this conversation, you know, I'm using words like allegedly and claims as we do, but it's more than Tom Hooper. You have seen these documents and confirmed that they say what he says they do.
I have seen these documents. I have talked to most of the organizations and people that are referred to in these documents, including the government departments.
And how did Pride Toronto respond when this began to come out and these allegations were made public?
Well, Pride responded, and I interviewed the current executive director of Pride, Sherwin Modesty, myself, about these issues. And their response largely has been, first of all, let me stress that Pride has not denied any of this.
Okay.
They have commissioned an independent report from KPMG, which is a worldwide accounting firm, to look into these allegations and to investigate exactly what happened with this grant money. And the ED, Mr. Modesty, says that going forward, Pride's emphasis is going to be on transparency and accountability, but also stresses that he was not there when these grants were applied for and for the life of most of those grants, and that neither was the current board.
I was going to ask you about that. So this is not the same Pride leadership that would have engaged in these allegedly misleading grants. Do we know either from what anybody on Pride Now has said or from looking back, you know, do we have any answer as to how this happened?
Well, the executive director of Pride at the time that these grants were applied for and obtained was Olivia Nuama. I reached out to her and have not heard back from her. So she has not commented on what happened in terms of these grants.
Why did the leadership at Pride Toronto change? And is it, could it be related to the sorts of things that these documents could reveal?
It could be, but again, I have not had the opportunity to speak to Olivia about this, so I can't say one way or the other whether that was a factor in her leaving. I should say that she left within what I would regard as the normal turnover period for Pride leadership.
Okay.
So it may well just have been she left for her own reasons. And I should say also that none of this had emerged at the time that she did depart the organization.
Fair enough. So now Pride has KPMG doing a full review. What else have they promised, and what might come out of these documents being made public?
Well, they have promised to release the full report from KPMG when it becomes available, which should be any day now. Mm-hmm. And of course, Extra will be following up on that. As I said, what they have talked about is the importance of restoring trust from the queer community and the importance of putting in procedures that will ensure that things like progress reports on future grants are also made available to the public so that everyone can see exactly what they're doing with the money that they're receiving. If they follow what they say they're going to do, what we could see from Pride is increased transparency and accountability going forward, and it becoming a somewhat less opaque organization.
I'm not going to ask you, obviously, to speak for the entire community, but as somebody that does cover queer issues extensively, could you maybe give us a sense of where that feeling of a lack of trust that clearly even Pride Toronto is now feeling comes from? Like, what's happened with Pride over the past decade or so to cause that shift, if anything?
Basically, I think what we've seen, certainly over the past decade, is a growing split within the community in terms of its view of Pride. Pride itself has evolved, certainly over the past decade, towards an event that has moved away from its roots as a protest movement mm-hmm. and its roots commemorating protest events like Stonewall in 1969, like the bathhouse raids in 1981, as previously mentioned, like the AIDS epidemic that took the lives of so many gay men in the 80s, and has evolved more into a celebration with heavy support from corporations and governments. The Pride Parade, which occurs on the final Sunday of Pride, has become a huge event. It's generally regarded as being the third or fourth largest Pride event in the world and brings an estimated 1 to 2 million people out to celebrate it. And so that debate has become a major thing within the queer community. Should Pride be a huge celebration, or should it return to its protest roots? This came to, I guess you could say, came to a bit of a head when a decision was made to ban police participation.
Yes.
In the parade following the Black Lives Matter protest in 2016.
My next question was going to be about that, actually. So maybe you can summarize where that fight is now, because I gather that this has gone back and forth a lot over the past few years, and a lot of people see it as kind of the fight for the heart of Pride.
That's right. And this, in fact, does tie in to some extent to this current controversy around the grants. In 2016, during the Pride parade, Black Lives Matter Toronto blocked off the parade for a while until Pride agreed going forward that uniformed members of the Toronto Police Department would no longer be allowed to participate in the parade because of the tension between police and the queer community, and especially between police and trans people, and between police and racialized members of that queer community. That ban was enacted in Toronto, as it's been enacted in a number of major cities across North America. And police did not participate in the Pride Parade in 2017 and 2018. So that ban on police was in place in January of 2018, when Bruce MacArthur, who was the serial killer who was terrorizing the queer community in Toronto, was arrested.
Right.
At the time, there were a lot of accusations that Toronto police had done a really poor job of that investigation, and that the deaths of gay men, and specifically of racialized gay men, were not taken seriously by the police. But later in 2018, before these grants were approved by the government departments, Pride extended an invitation to police to participate in the 2019 parade, and sent a document out to its members before their 2019 AGM in January, explaining that this was a financial decision and that banning the police, or unbanning the police, I should say, was a necessity for Pride obtaining funding.
I'm sure that went over really well with many people in the community.
Well, with many people, it didn't. It did not, indeed. And in fact, at that AGM, Pride members voted, although only by two votes, to continue the ban on police participation. And yet, at the same time, Pride, in obtaining these grants, part of what they had specified to the government that they would do with money was to work with police departments, both on the commemoration of the decriminalization of homosexuality and on ongoing initiatives to try to improve the relationship between police and queer communities across Canada.
Hmm.
Part of what has also angered some people within the queer community is the sense that Pride was willing to, in some ways, abandon its commitment to the, specifically to the Black members of the queer community for money.
Hmm.
Now, obviously, for in 2020 and 2021, Pride did not occur in person.
Right.
So this wasn't an issue.
Is it planned for in-person this year? And are we talking about this yet?
It is planned for in-person this year in June of 2022. And at this point, Sherwin Modesty told me that the ban on police participation remains in place. And he says will not be removed unless the members of Pride vote to rescind it.
The last thing I want to ask you about in relation to this, and I'm glad you illustrated all the history for us behind these documents and how they can highlight the fracturing in terms of opinions on Pride. What happens now? Is there a way for these two sides to coexist? Should Pride be one big event that turns into a party? Should it be two separate events, a party and a protest? Like, for as long as I've lived in Toronto, it has always trended more towards a party. And the more I learn about the roots of it, it feels like that doesn't make a lot of sense. And I know there's a lot of people in the community that feel that way. Is there any way to reconcile it?
Well, you basically touched on the crux of the matter. That is the big debate going forward. Personally, I do not think the two can be reconciled. I mean, I'm not saying I think you can have parties, of course, throughout Pride.
Sure.
But I think the emphasis has to be on one or the other. One of the reasons that Pride has become such a big party is because of the money that has rolled in from corporations.
Right.
Anyone who watches the Pride parade these days sees that much of it is taken up by corporations, banks, all sorts of things, rolling out tractor trailers with dancers and so on.
Sure. I mean, you're speaking to somebody from an organization that works for Rogers, and we've sponsored many floats in the past as Canada's hugest telecom.
Right. And in many ways, that is a good thing. It does show an increasing acceptance among corporate Canada of the queer community. Now, to be cynical, much of that acceptance is rooted in the money
sure.
that queer consumers have. But nonetheless, it does point to an increasing acceptance within the mainstream of the queer community. But there are many members of the queer community, trans people, for example, Black and racialized members of the queer community, that do not feel themselves to be fully accepted by the mainstream or indeed by the mainstream queer community. Those concerns, I think, sit uneasily with the idea of Pride being a major party for a month. And I think that these current events around this grant are going to deepen that gap. They're certainly going to deepen the sense of mistrust that a large part of the community feels about Pride. I should say that one of the other questions to be resolved is, because Pride in person did not happen for the past 2 years, have people realized that perhaps we don't need Pride? Or will people be even more excited to see Pride return? Either way, I think that we are moving towards a situation where one side or the other is going to be disappointed, where Pride will either fully commit to basically being a celebration and a party, or will return to its roots as a scaled-down event more focused on activism and protest.
It will be fascinating to see which way this goes. And thank you so much for the context around it, Krishna.
You're very welcome. And you're right, it will be quite fascinating.
Krishna Rao, writing for Extra. That was The Big Story. For more, head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. Find us on Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN. Talk to us anytime via email, thebigstorypodcast, all one word, at rci.rogers.com. A bunch of you have told me that I shouldn't list individual podcast players because you all know Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, etc. But what if you are tired of the mainstream podcast players? What if you want to listen to us on Podkicker or iCatcher or Clementine or Instacast or Media Monkey? You can find us there as well. I'm going to do this until you get really angry with me or until I run out of podcast players. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.